Welcome back to Totally Unrelated. I'm your host, Adrian Cosby, and I want to say right off the bat, thank you to everybody that sends me a message and lets me know what they think of the podcast, what they like, what they don't like. It's immensely helpful. Without your feedback, I just start swinging away, you know? I don't know what I'm doing any more than you know what I'm doing. So with your feedback, I'm able to make minor changes, which I think makes the show better. And we're growing together, guys. We're growing together is what's happening here. A couple of updates before we get into this episode. I'll be in Miami, Oklahoma. I know. You didn't think Oklahoma had a Miami, but they do. They also have a Looney Saloon inside the Stables Casino. And I will be there this weekend, which is like October 23rd and 24th, with Mike Baldwin, a very funny comedian. He's got the t-shirt that says, "Ninjas Hate Crunchy Leaves." Very funny. I don't even remember the joke for that, but I think that's self-explanatory. The week after that, I'll be in Merrillville, Indiana, which is about an hour south of Chicago, with Bill Bushart. That's October 30th and the 31st. And that's the next couple weeks of dates for me. The Funny Bone in Liberty Township is all but complete. We're waiting to move in furniture. That was supposed to happen today, but the movie theater upstairs flooded and slowed down the process. So the soft open, which was scheduled tentatively for the 23rd, has been pushed back. They're not even going to be putting in the furniture until next week. Next Wednesday, I think, we'll finish that. And I'll give you an update, let you know when the first show there is going to happen. We may be doing some live podcasting from there. I have a couple show ideas that I've pitched to the manager, and we're supposed to talk about it next week. So I'll give you an update on that. What else is going on? I want to thank the sponsors. Republic Wireless, if you're looking for low-cost cell phones, say you have a child, and you're like, I don't want to pay $100 a month for this kid to have a cell phone. You know, there's a lot of good family plans out there, but there's something to be said for getting your child a cell phone that does not connect to the internet. Just a cell phone. It'll get on the internet for Wi-Fi. $10 a month, Republic Wireless, affordable phones. You can't beat that monthly price. You're not going to get a better friends and family price for that. I personally use Republic Wireless, and I have nothing bad to say about it. The best part about it is you can change your plan up to twice a month for no fee, no extra charges. They're actually moving into a whole new pricing plan. They're going to be introducing new phones, I'm guessing, in November. I'm just guessing, and also pressuring them to do that because I'm ready for a new phone. I've had this one for like 8 months. It's getting kind of ridiculous. I'm ready to upgrade, guys. Let's get on it. Republic Wireless, go to my website, adriancosby.com, click on the banner, visit the website, buy a phone. Very affordable. They use Wi-Fi calling, way better when you're at your house. It doesn't rack up extra minutes, and that's how they're able to keep the prices so low. A new sponsor this week, totally unofficial, but it's more important for me that you guys have some benefit from the experiences that I've had. And the experiences that I've had at Midas for all of my auto part needs, including tires, oil changes. I get an oil change once a month, and that's for 10,000 miles. I get tires once a year. I never have any complaints. I think the number one fear when you go to an auto parts store is that you're going to get ripped off for a bunch of stuff that you don't need. At Midas, they only sell you what you need, and they're not always trying to upsell you. I go to the Midas on Airway, and I live in Chicago. I go to the Midas on Airway Road in Dayton, Ohio, and I live in Chicago. Just so happens that I need oil change, you know, when I'm in town. I go there. I went to the one by the Dayton Mall, same level of service. And this is why I like Midas. Every time I go to a new location, they call me and ask me how it was. Not that location, but their customer service center calls me and asks me to give them a survey. And a lot of people don't want to be bothered with that kind of stuff. I live for that. That's your ability to have, you know, affect real change at the places that you do business. McDonald's is not going to call you, you know, about how was your Big Mac last week? Because it was terrible. You know, they know that. They don't care. They just want to sell it to you. Midas is, I believe it's a privately owned company. I did a little bit of research on them because I was very interested. But any company that takes the time to wonder how their customers feel about the service. And they're typing in my answers. It's a survey, but I'm giving long-winded answers, and they're typing them in. Love it. Love it. Midas, let's do business. This episode of the podcast is going to be edited by Audacity, so I want to give them a shout-out. Audacity, audio editing software. I got mine from download.com. You can download it directly from audacity.com. And it's working pretty well. I usually use the Adobe Premiere Suite. I think it's 5.5 that I use. And it's more than I need. And it's a completely different language than Audacity, but having some editing experience, I knew what I had to look up in order to do it. And this episode has taken me exponentially longer to do than any other episode of this podcast that I've ever done. But I was learning a new format, so sorry for the delays. It's a great episode. Guest Lisa Landry, clearly the most famous person that's been on my podcast to date. And she's just a lovely person. I've recorded this intro. This is the third time I've attempted to record an intro. And I'm going to let her describe herself because I think she does that best. In the other intros, I kind of tried to say something about her. But I'm going to let her speak for herself because she does that better. A couple people asked me who the music is for the intro music. That's _ orchestra. I think I gave them a full credit in the first episode. I love that song, Devil on My Shoulder. And I let it play a little bit longer for this episode, and I'm not going to do any outro music. So when it's over, it's over. But I want to give them a shout out. I got that from FML, Free Music Library or something like that. I'll look that up. I'll add it to the intro of the podcast, but it's a great place to go to get music that is for free use, which means it's not copywritten and you can use it for whatever you want. Just make sure that you cite the source just to be a nice person, right? If you're going to use their music. With that out of the way, I want to say go see Lisa if you're in Ohio. November 5th through the 8th, she's at Go Bananas, which has been routinely voted the best comedy club. I don't know if it's Southern Ohio. I don't know if they're saying all of Ohio, but it's a great club. It's a different kind of an experience than most comedy clubs. This is probably much more of like the New York style club, low ceilings. It's just in a great place, great location. McLeavy's Pub right next door. You know, you can drink before, you can drink after, you can drink during. The thing I like about Go Bananas the most is that they seem to have figured out what a lot of places haven't, and they do their checks individually with like Palm Pilots at the table. It prints off a little receipt for you right there. Every server, I mean, it's fast and efficient. It's well run. I love my Funny Bones. I love Go Bananas. I love Wiley's Comedy Joint. I'm not saying one's better than the other. I've always had a good time at Go Bananas, and I've always had a good time at the Funny Bone in Dayton and Newport. And now we have the Liberty Funny Bone coming, and I'm just a big proponent for everybody playing along well, and I believe that all of those clubs do play along very nicely. So, if you're in Ohio, we've got more clubs than people. We got the Improv in Cleveland. We've got Toledo Funny Bone. You got Laughs in Toledo. You got Columbus Funny Bone. You got Cincinnati Funny Bone now. Newport Funny Bone, which is technically in Kentucky, but, you know, you park there to go see the Reds or the Bengals. So I'm still calling that Cincinnati. Dayton Funny Bone. Wiley's Comedy Joint, another one of my favorite clubs. First set I ever did in a comedy club was at Wiley's. And that's on my YouTube channel. I might unlock that one day for people if they want to see it. It's probably one of my most viewed videos, but it's painful for me to watch, so I don't want to submit that to anybody. They don't want to see it. That out of the way, let's go ahead and get this episode started. This is my favorite episode that I've ever recorded with a guest. We're all over the place. I think Lisa and I share a certain amount of cohesion when it comes to ADD and what I would call organic conversation. We talk about a lot of things, and the segues are not easily identified. But It's a great episode. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Let me know what you think. Good, bad, or indifferent. I'm going to be on Stitcher soon. I'm working on that handle. Right now, you can get me on iTunes. You can get it directly from the Podbean site, podbean.adriancosby.com, or from my website, cosbycomedy.com, or adriancosby.com, or you can just pick it up off the link on Facebook or Twitter, wherever I post it. Thanks, guys. I love you all. Enjoy the episode. I noticed recently misogyny in a way that I didn't recognize it before, like in terms of men speaking to women or women needing to contact a man about something and asking me to do it because they think the man will be more receptive to another male.
You know what's really messed up? That's the truth of it. Like we think that we don't need that anymore because we've evolved as a society, but unfortunately there's a lot of men who have not evolved.
Yeah, I think I've met enough men, and I really, this is weird, but I remember being a child and feeling like I would be 30 years old and having adult conversations, like, around that time. I think as I got older, I'd like, I'll probably start having more adult conversations with people once I get to be 30. But I remember being, like, 13 and having adult conversations with adults, and they'd be like, wow, you really seem really wise for 13 or something. And then as I got to 30, I just started getting more and more disappointed with some of the adult conversations I was having with people. And I realized, like, we're all just kind of big kids.
Oh, we're all five-year-olds.
Yeah, with bigger vocabularies, and maybe we've
developed more experiences to talk about, but we're all still children.
Yeah, and I think we still kind of pull from what we learned when we were in our formative years, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Yeah.
How we related to women then as men.
Right.
A lot of guys don't evolve from that.
Well, it's also, I would agree with you, but I mean, think about how many patterns we all hold on to without even recognizing what we're doing. Like, sometimes I catch myself making a sound like my mom would make, and I'm like, where did that come from?
Yeah.
And then you're like, how much is trapped inside my cells that I don't even know? So.
Yeah, I think some of it's DNA, and some of it's learned. And I think when you mix that together, I know people who have studied psychology, you know, and still have huge blind spots when it comes to how they act towards other people. As far as, you know, like, I think there's a push for people to have this sort of superiority, like, based on
education,
just based on things that they've done, you know what I mean? Like, you know, I've been to college, so people that haven't been to college, I can't really. I knew a guy who was in the army during World War II and Vietnam. No, maybe it was just Vietnam. He was really old. He was delivered pizzas. And he didn't want to hear anybody's political view if they hadn't served in the military.
Okay.
And I thought, I could understand that to a degree if you had to do military service in order to vote. But you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And not everybody should be in the military.
True.
You know what I mean? It's like if everybody... there'd be some problems if everybody had to do military service. And I thought, like, well, you know, is that your, do you have this superiority complex because that's something that you did? You know, and there's other people that are like, that are from LA, live in LA their whole life, and they're like, oh, you know, if you're not in LA, you're not anywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, they go to a small town, they're like, oh, this is so boring. And I'm like, yeah, I get that, but it's like, are you the life of the party everywhere you go? Is
right.
this a geographical superiority complex? And I think it's just one of those things that makes people comfortable at the end of the day.
Being superior?
Well, no, just having a fixed set of beliefs
yeah.
that they developed when they were young.
Well, yeah, because then you don't have to think anymore for yourself. Like, okay, I got it. I'm in my box.
Yeah.
I'm comfortable in my box.
Yeah.
I know what I'm doing in my box.
Compartmentalize.
Don't take the lid off.
Yeah, exactly. Especially my box. You know, I'll look into your box, but don't look into my box because I don't like to look inward.
Right.
I'm really good at looking outward.
Well, you know, that's, we were talking about this the other night. Like, everybody just has their TV on now.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody has their constant white noise that disconnects them from really examining themselves. Like, your phone is constantly in front of your face. You know, the TV's on. Get in the car, you got the satellite radio. How many other channels can you investigate while you're in the car? You know what I mean?
It is a constant bombardment.
Binge watching. Think about how many times you watch an entire season and then follow it with another season. And the people who produced that did not mean for anybody to sit and take it in all at once. We lose the nuance. We lose the connection of the characters. We even lose the structure because it gets to like, oh, I only have one more. I only have one more. And we do that with each other too, it feels like.
Chasing the dragon. Let me move on.
Yeah. That's enough of this. I'm going to go over here now. I binged you.
Yeah.
I got what I need from you. I'm going to go do this now.
Yeah, that's really an interesting concept because I'm getting ready to binge watch something. I'm like planning to binge watch Narcos tomorrow.
Okay.
When I get back to Chicago. And I hear a lot of good things, but I'm like, I'm only going to watch 3 episodes.
But that won't happen.
I know. I have all day, so I know I can watch the whole thing. And I'm like planning for it. And then at the end of the day, the new Walking Dead season premiere starts. And that was the last thing that the last thing I binge watched was Homeland. But before that, like, I did, like, a downward negative heroin spiral on Walking Dead because it took about 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
And I told myself I wasn't going to start any new shows till they had completed. That way, when it was over, it was over.
Mm-hmm.
But I accidentally started watching Walking Dead because it came on right after Mad Men, which I was fully caught up on. And the pilot hooked me in 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was literally like, I was, where can I tie off to watch the rest of this? And I went home and drank a bottle of whiskey that I got for Christmas and watched every episode. And I think you're right. I lost a lot.
We all do it. You lose a lot. And then plus, you're not supposed to take in all that violence and all that despair and all that heartbreak. You can't do that. It's unhealthy. But we're all doing it.
It takes your levels. It desensitizes you on some level.
And it's also soul-crushing.
Yeah.
You know, whether you recognize it as such or not,
yeah,
it's at a subconscious level.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those things where I think by the time I got done with it, I had created metaphors for everything that was happening in the show in terms of the zombies not really being zombies as much as they were distractions. You know, like the zombies are kind of a metaphor for social media, the news, politicians, politics.
I think it's all those who are unawakened.
Yeah.
Like, it's more people wake up to stuff. You can see who is not with us. They are the walking dead amongst us.
It's funny because people that don't watch the show, they're like, I can't really get into zombies. And I'm like, you don't get it. The zombies are just the distraction that this group of people who are having a family kind of experience have to deal with. Because the show could be about post-apocalyptic. It could be about... you know, there's a show on called Animals. I don't know if it's still on, but there was a show where animals were attacking people. And I was like, this is just The Walking Dead, but the animals are the zombies now. And I'm thinking to myself, like, this has been told a lot of different ways, but what makes it really work is the interpersonal communication between the characters. I mean, because you could replace the zombies with some other crisis.
Right.
You know, the world coming to an end. You have the show The Dome. I like these shows where there's like something eminently dangerous is going to happen. And that's what keeps them
Bring
going.
Bring the death. Bring the apocalypse.
Well, I learned how to watch TV on the show Lost.
Okay.
That was the first show I learned how to become a fan of or binge watch.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so disappointing that I was like, I'm never watching a network TV show again.
I'm not. I'm one of the few people who didn't watch it.
Lost is like Facebook.
I
have a new respect for people who've never been on Facebook.
Yeah.
And people that have never watched Lost, I'm like, good for you. You're smart.
It got me the same way that Walking Dead. I watched a 15-minute like recap of season one, and I was like, oh, I gotta see this. But I'd heard so many people talking about it. It's like,
oh, yeah, it was the buzz. Everybody.
Did you watch Mad Men?
I did.
What'd you think of that?
Brilliant.
What about how it made us look at the gender and race roles? Everybody was shit on, except for straight, white, Christian men.
Did that change? Really? I mean, let's get honest about this.
Well, at least
you
now,
know, I don't see a calendar for like, you know, white dude month, and that's how we know we've arrived
at total equality.
Yeah. Or like, oh, protect the white dudes because they're no longer in power.
Yeah, and they're getting close.
Well, that's why everybody's breaking down. Like, you can watch what we have right now. This patriarchy is so not gonna move us forward as a planet any longer. It can't sustain. Like, literally can't sustain. How the fuck are you gonna run a world where half the gender gives birth to the other half of the world, who then enslaves us because we have vaginas, which is how they got here in the first place? Do y'all sick? He says sick.
Yeah,
it's a sick setup.
It's there's a couple arguments that I've heard that I don't know. One of them being like, you know, there's a reason that white men have been in power for so long, and that's because they're supposed to be, or that because they're the most adapted to be. But I also think it's one of those situations where it's like, no one great power has ever sustained forever.
Not forever.
And I think people are like, we need to make some changes. And I think the big change is going to come, but I think it's going to come through like a really violent revolution.
Yeah.
Maybe not violent, not but violent. It might be socially violent. It might not be physically violent.
Well, you can already feel that.
Yeah.
You can feel that. And it's sad because I think there's more of us than them. And I don't think this country is run by white Christian men, because there's nothing Christian about what is done to us as a people in a country.
Agreed.
I mean, too many of us are starving, can't feed our families, can't go to college, can't even put gas in the car, even though you have two jobs.
Right. And then there's the argument that, you just got to work harder. You know.
Exactly. It's your fault.
Yeah.
Why haven't you gotten there yet?
Yeah.
Come on, you don't know how to do this? Don't look on TV. Everybody's got money.
Nobody helped me.
Right. So you do it. So you pull yourself up by the bootstraps.
I think that's another DNA level thing. The ability to pull yourself up from your bootstraps, or even the motivation. You know, like motivation in
the
general.
Drive.
Yeah, I saw this quote the other day because I used this app called MyFitnessPal, which is, it's like Facebook.
That's not gay at all.
No, it's not. No. It's not. But it's like, it's just helping because I have this 20 pounds I've been trying to lose, and it's really been helpful. But it's like Facebook for fitness people who have goals, set goals and stuff, and they're kind of, the goals are public if you're friends with somebody, so you can see.
It's like they've lost
how much weight and stuff.
So
like
your friends
that.
Can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's
shame
so
you,
positive. It's so positive compared to Facebook that it's made me realize, like, oh, social media can be a positive thing.
That's the beauty of the possibility of what we have in front of us. We just gravitate towards the negative, though, as a species.
I wonder when that will.
Well, I can tell you when it'll change. When we learn how to be patient with our kids and ourselves. Because it's... like, I'm weird in this way. I have a child, but I don't physically live with my son, which is heartbreaking. It's like being kicked in the throat.
Yeah, I know.
Every moment. At the same time, I feel like I'm blessed because when I'm with my child, I'm with my child. And when I'm without him, I miss him so badly. I can watch other people interact with their children. And it's not a judgment. It's like I can see where they are just so impatient, so desensitized, so in a hurry that they tell the kid things like, no, because I said so. Yeah. Stop asking why. You know the answer. Like this kind of angry, I don't want to deal with your shit right now because I've got too much other stuff popping in my head.
Mm-hmm.
Love you, but I don't have this right now. But that child's being told, don't ask questions, don't assert yourself. What you have to say is not important because I've already said that I'm the grown-up. Well, children are really brilliant. They're annoying, which is why we don't listen to them.
Right.
But they truly have so much more ability to see things from a different angle, and we push that away from them. So by the time they get to be 25, they've been told to shut up in the classroom. Maybe they've been beaten by a lover. Maybe they've had a woman break their heart, and now they don't have their kid with them. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. You have all these levels of being told that what you have to say isn't worthwhile.
Sure, sure. I think I definitely...
And then we do it to our kids.
Yeah.
And so I think the pattern.
I think there's definitely patterns, and I see the pattern that I have with my son being that my dad was, I don't want to say physically abusive, but he was physically corrective. You know what I mean? So if it was punishment, it was coming physically. And it was spanking. And I probably got slapped in the face a handful of times. But I remember feeling like, after the first memory of a spanking, like, this isn't love. You know what I mean? Like,
it's control. That's control.
But he would always come back, and I think a lot of parents do, you know, I only spank you because I love you. And it was one of those situations where it was like, I remember telling myself, like, if I ever have children, I'll never hit them because this is such a bullshit conversation.
Yeah.
I can't even... Like, I'm like...
Eight. It's twisted.
Yeah.
It's a method of torture.
But at the same time, the way I correct my son isn't with physical violence, but I'm not very strict, but I have a very strict snap when I do snap, and it's a stern voice. And it never was an issue until he got to be 13, and then he would start to express a sadness that I had spoke to him that way. And before that... You know, every year before that, it would be like, just like if I just been, you know, like a dog, you know, like psst, and they calm down, but like, we're still having fun, right? We're still having fun. Yeah, yeah, we're still having fun. Just can't jump up like that. And so when I told him, you know, we had to have a talk about that. Like, look, you know, if I correct you because you were misbehaving and I need to do it differently, then you need to tell me that. The moping, you know, because I don't notice you moping for maybe five or 10 minutes. That's not the way to correct me. You know what I mean? This is a two-way conversation. And I think that really gave him a lot of power in
Because you enabled him to speak up for himself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Instead of doing the passive-aggressive, ask me what's wrong. Such a bitch way to live your life. But so many of us have been taught that we have to because we're not supposed to speak up and ask questions.
Sure. And the passive aggressive is still sending a message. It is still an aggressive message. It's just,
but it's a victimized message. I'm a victim. I'm going to sit here and be a victim because I'm a martyr.
Your power away, exactly.
And, you know, you should feel guilty because you hurt my feelings and why don't you know why? And it's a sickness.
Without taking responsibility for any of the actions that caused
that
the whole
went
situation.
There. Yeah.
Being a parent is challenging. Yeah. For everybody. And I think no two kids are the same, which is the same thing with, like, I had a discussion with somebody once about child support and that it should only cost X number of dollars to raise a child in any given area. So why do people pay different amounts? And I'm like, it's not about the amount of money it costs to raise a child. It's about having a stable lifestyle for the child or whatever. And I think that that's maybe not the best way to do it, but it is... a very considerate way of doing it, as opposed to saying it costs $15 a week to raise a child across America. Right. So anybody paying child support only gets $15 a week.
Well, you can't do that anyway, because obviously some things are more expensive in certain markets, you know?
There's that, and I think also there's a fact of, you know, if I make six figures and the person that I got pregnant makes, you know, $1,500, you know, every 2 months, and we have a child together and there's shared custody or whatever, like, it's going to make it really hard for that child to not have a bias about which parent they want to stay with or whatever, you know. And I think, obviously, some people pay, you know, I've seen some child support cases where somebody's getting fleeced, but...
Oh, completely.
I've seen others, like, whenever I go, I always go in person to pay child support, I usually pay like 2 or 3 months at a time because I'm like, what are you going to do with, you know, $110 a week?
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, let me pay for the whole month at the very least. That way you can go pay some bills or something.
I have to pay that once a month.
I can pay like for the year at one time. Mm-hmm. But if I get like 2 months behind, then I could get arrested.
It's really sick, isn't it?
Well, it's...
It's just such a messed up system. My family court thing, they need to federalize it, first of all. We need to be federalized. People move too much now.
Yes.
Okay? And we have such corruption in this country. We're watching it all on blow up right now.
Yeah.
We're seeing it everywhere.
Yeah.
Okay? we have so much corruption, and especially in these smaller towns where it's easier to... I grew up with Jim Bob, so court's going to take care of me.
Yeah, don't worry.
We know that, Judge Girl. So that's what happens. If you make the mistake, or not mistake, but romantic reality of falling for somebody and setting up your home in a county where they know everybody you're the outsider...
Yes.
Your life is going to be fucked up.
That's my one friend. He pays more for one. He's got a bunch of kids, but he pays more for one than he does for the rest of them combined. Mm-hmm. And she actually knows everybody in the system. I think she even works at the court.
They might know the cops. You might have somebody abusing you, saying they're going to come kill you, rape you, kill those kids. But that person knows the police, so nothing happens.
It is kind of a...
And that goes on all the time.
It's funny how... You know, some people would just be like, well, I just have a lot of friends. And other people from that are outside of that circle would be like, that's like a good old boy system kind of it's not on its merits, but who you know.
But that's our court system.
But
that's
isn't that
criminal
like
court,
what our
that's
whole
family court, that's traffic
is built
court.
On?
Completely.
Like, that's our whole political system.
We have a beautiful promise of what we have in this country, but I don't think we have the reality. We have bits and pieces of the reality. We have a great system compared to most other nations.
Yeah.
It needs improvement.
Yeah, well, there's room for improvement.
Yeah.
Or the idea that anything's done, you know, like, or that this has been, I mean, we're still debating Roe v. Wade.
Thank you. We're not.
No, but
we're not. But
some
that's the thing.
Are.
If women keep taking ownership of their bodies, if we keep expressing ourselves politically, if we keep having the freedom of not being tied down to children who they want to grow up and go fight wars. So, of course, you have to keep us down because we are half the population. And when half the population wakes up to the fact that we are paid less, beaten in our homes, not appreciated in our business and career aspects, when we wake up to that fact, you're not going to be able to stay in power. You're going to have to share it.
Right.
And most people don't want to share.
I think there's that. And I think there's also just a cultural catch-up. You know, I think the reason that we have so few women in politics and so few black people in politics is that because they've been held back for so long.
You know, the money.
Yeah.
How are you going to get the money together to run?
And also, you have to still be let in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you're a woman or a black person, they still have to
approve
you.
They have to okay
you. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So here's a question for you. I kind of feel like black Republicans are, not an oxymoron, but one of those things that's kind of like, a black Republican to me is sort of like a person with dreadlocks who doesn't smoke weed. You know what I mean? Like, it's not totally unheard of, but it's like, really?
I'm going to blow your mind.
So.
My best friend is a black Republican.
Really?
Which I understand.
Male or female?
Female.
Wow.
I understand.
Because that was my question. How do you think, like, do you think female Republicans... are in that same boat? Because I think there's more ideological... When you take race out of it, I think you can get closer to the ideology.
Mm.
But, like, as a black female Republican, what is her... She's got to have a pitch, right? Like, she's got to be like... when people, she's like, well, I'm a Republican, and that's because...
She's been raised as a Republican. I think that's got a lot to do with it. I will tell you, she's extremely proud to have a black president. She just doesn't like Obama.
Yeah.
But she's proud to be black. It's not. She has a lot of guns.
Okay.
She has a lot of dogs.
Uh-huh.
She lives in Arizona.
Okay.
Everybody's Republican in Arizona.
Yeah.
If she's not the Bible thumpy, everybody's going to burn in hell because of gay marriage Republican.
Right.
Those people aren't even Republicans. Those are just.
Does she ever talk about racism?
Yes.
Like being.
Completely.
Being,
she thinks Obama's, you know, that they come at him because they're racist.
Okay?
All right. She sees it for what it is.
Uh-huh.
However, most of her ideologies line up with a Republican ticket.
Sure.
She's pro-choice.
Uh-huh.
A lot of Republicans are.
Uh-huh.
A
progressive Republican.
Very much so. And a strong woman. A super strong woman. She's in a different industry, obviously, but she's hit a lot of career firsts for Phoenix. You know, she's the first woman to do this. She's the first woman to be here. She's the first woman to accomplish this. So it's weird. I have a lot of Republican friends.
I do, too.
And they're very the women are very strong. extremely strong. A lot of them have been single moms uh-huh. at one point. A lot of them are extremely compassionate towards other women. Uh-huh. They're not racists. They're not sexists.
And I don't want to make it seem like all Republicans are racist. Many, I just think that that's...
Well, that's what we think the stereotype is.
Sure. Okay, our stereotype,
because we do, you and I both, I think, vote left.
Yeah.
Okay? So we are ingrained to see them as this enemy.
Right.
Because that's what we've been taught.
It's like the new Cold War.
Totally, but that's the fallacy of it.
Right.
See, like, I think this country needs a civil war, but I don't think it should be race or gender oriented. I think it should be West Coast versus East Coast. That's where we need to come at. Like, because I just feel like the West Coast is so much more tolerant. There's so much less judgment. You go back east, it's all these shitty little villages. And like we were talking about DNA.
Yeah.
You have these crappy little villages. I ain't going to say which region of the country. Where there isn't any progress and they're proud of it.
Yes.
There isn't, and nothing's changed here in 100 years, and that's the way it is. Okay, well, that's why all of your young people are moving away from here so they can make and sustain a career.
Sure.
That's why it feels like everywhere you go around here, someone wants to punch you. You don't smile at one another.
That's
There's
funny.
No appreciation of joy. If you show an emotion, they think something is wrong with you. And I feel like that's because it's a region of people where those who wanted to chase their dreams, who said, this is going to be scary, but I'm going to pack up that wagon. I'm going to go try to make it happen. They left a long time ago and kept heading west. And the people who stayed behind were too scared to go chase what they wanted. So they learned how to settle. And then they made more babies
yeah.
who've been entrenched in that logic. We need to take that logic and give those people hugs, marijuana, therapy, and tell them, like, we can all progress together.
Yeah.
And this is how you do it. It's West Coast values.
I think there's definitely, I definitely agree with the crux of your position here in that the DNA of the Westerner has a sense of adventure. I lived in California.
Complete adventure.
And
openness.
Yeah. And I think that that's a geographical.
Well, it's more sky. You feel it. You see the possibilities.
Yeah, I was just in California this summer and I felt very. Even Colorado.
I love Colorado.
Like, at the minute I crossed the border into Colorado, I was like, I want to live here.
Right, you're with your people.
Yeah.
Tolerant, open,
I went to a McDonald's. It was like the second to last time I ever went to a McDonald's. And I went in, and they were smiling.
Mm-hmm.
They thanked me for coming in. The manager, when it was like, we were waiting on fries, and the manager was like, it'll be just a second. I'll bring them right to you.
Isn't that fun?
And then I go to McDonald's here in this town where we're in now. And I ordered like a salad, a burger, and a water. And the only thing they got right was the water.
Wow.
And I had to get it myself.
Wow.
So it was one of those things. And I went back and had to return both the items so I could get what I actually ordered. And both of those were wrong the second time too. So it was like one of those things where I was like, you know what? I can't eat at McDonald's anymore.
Well, you shouldn't be doing that anyway.
I shouldn't.
But sometimes
and I knew that.
You want to do that.
And
yeah.
I knew that.
I got it. I had an experience the other day when I got here. I went and I stopped at Chipotle, and the guy working behind the counter was like, "You're so nice. Where are you from?"
Yeah.
Just because I said thank you. Oh, this looks really good. I couldn't, you know. But why would you not have gratitude toward the person who just made
your food,
your lunch?
Yeah.
It's like
how
thank
much of
you.
That goes California, and how much of that is being a professional entertainer. Because I feel like...
But I think I hear where you're coming from, totally. But it was the same experience of, like, just common courtesy.
Yeah.
Like what you experienced in Colorado
at
McDonald's.
Yeah, yeah.
That's just common courtesy. We used to have that for one another.
Well, you know, in some places they do. Like in the South, have you seen, like, you go to the grocery store in the South and they have, you'll be in line. You'll be like, this seems to be taking a long time. And you'll look to the front of the line and you'll see that the cashier is showing the lady in line baby pictures, right? And I would notice that happening, and I was like, man, everybody knows each other.
But California's like that too, NorCal.
Yeah.
NorCal's like that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, places in Utah?
Yeah.
They do that?
Yeah, Utah for sure.
You know, and I live outside of Las Vegas right now, and my community is very much like that. And sometimes you're like, God, really? And then you're like, wait a minute.
It does not happen in Chicago.
No, it doesn't happen in Chicago or New York or LA. That would never happen.
They'd be like, you're about to get shot if you hold up this line at all. You know, what's funny is I had a completely different experience. I went and shopped at Whole Foods.
Mm-hmm.
And I shopped at this store called Jewel Osco in Chicago, which is like the Kroger or Alpha Beta or whatever. You know, Piggly Wiggly, it's the chain there. And then I went to Trader Joe's. And when I went to Trader Joe's, I found my people. The smilers.
Yeah.
The people that are actually like...
They're engaged in their job. Yeah, well, because for them, it's like a call-in. Some of them, depending on the department, depending on who you deal with, it really is. They want to tell you all about the supplements.
Right.
I went to Sprouts a few weeks ago, and I talked to this one. I like Sprouts. That's where I feel like I'm with my people.
Right.
And because there's more gluten-free and vegan. And, you know, Whole Foods is like, oh, you want something vegan? That'll be $25.
Right.
I'm like, wait a minute. I'm not a Beverly Hills vegan. I'm a Thai vegan.
Yeah,
99-cent store vegan.
Right.
But Sprouts, and this woman was all about telling me about alkaline water. My mom's 84, and she's now reupholstering furniture because she's been drinking this for 2 years, and she had all these problems. She was on all these different medications, and now she's only on one pill a day. And sure enough, I went out and got some alkaline water.
Yeah, of course.
I was like, okay, everybody's been talking this up. Let me check it out. But it makes you feel like you're having a connection. Like, so many of us have no connections as we go through our days. You go to the job, it's that bullshit person that you don't like, and they're going to be up in your face, and then you're going to go back to this lover or husband or wife that you don't want to deal with, but you don't want to leave because you don't want to do the divorce thing because you know she's going to come at you. So your life is just this bullshit existence of, is it 5:30 yet? Can I pour a whiskey and not be a freak?
That's the one thing that I think we lose sight of is, well, not even as comics, because I think there's people doing comedy that should be doing other things. Could be and should be doing other things. They just, this is easy for them, so they do it. And I think that's what we find at most. It's rare that you find somebody doing a job
being challenged,
that they're like, this is what I chose to do.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
This isn't what I was able to do. Because, like, for instance, I had a job at Best Buy, an appliance store. What was I good at the time I applied for that job? I was an audiophile. I could have worked in the stereo department with ease, but they didn't have a need for the stereo department. They needed someone to sell appliances.
Oh, so man.
I learned how to sell appliances, but most people wouldn't.
Right.
You know what I mean? Most people would be like, I'll just work here until I find something better.
Yeah.
And just be kind of dead on the job or whatever. But I remember like getting pretty good at it and thinking like, I don't really like this, but I'm pretty good at it.
Yeah.
And then a day came when I was like, you know what? I think I might shoot myself if I show up there and try to sell appliances again. And so I just went and did something else.
Yeah.
You know, but some people don't. Some people just keep showing up.
Most people don't. Yeah. Most people don't. They don't want the rejection. They don't want to put in the time to go look for something new. They figure, you know, if I do this 3 more months, I'll get promoted.
Yeah, yeah. Ugh.
It's so much easier.
I've had over 40 jobs because I just, and I've only been fired twice. And both times it was because both times I definitely deserved to be fired, but it was one of those things where it wasn't like, the first time I ever got fired, it devastated me. I was just out of high school, and it was from a daycare center in my hometown, and I had fallen asleep watching kids during nap time on my day off.
What?
They called me in on my day off. Because I had to go get a measles, mumps, and rubella shot. If you work with kids, you got to get an MMR. And when I got the shot, they told me, they were like, you know, you're going to want to take it easy today. You're probably going to feel some cold symptoms, maybe some flu-like symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
Mild, but you'll feel it.
Some autism symptoms.
And yeah, exactly. You're going to be on the spectrum. And they called me like at like 11:15, and they're like, "Hey, can you come in for just like an hour?" And I was like, "I really feel like crap.
I just
got my shots." And they're like, "We just need you to watch some kids for nap time or whatever." And so I went in, and apparently, when they were relieving me, you know, I had my head back, and not only did they see the lady see me like that, she went and got somebody else to see me like
that. Oh, that's messed up.
And so it was kind of one of those.
She
things.
She set you up.
Well, I don't even know that I was set up. It was just one of those things where it was like, I could have been corrected.
Totally.
Or I could have explained myself. But it was such a shock to the system that I remember, like, I was bawling out of control. It was like, I felt so horrible.
Well, that was very unfair. They put you at such a disadvantage. You went through the motions. They told you. You jumped through the hoops.
Yeah, it was unfortunate for sure. I don't blame them. I didn't blame them after I said, you know, because, like, I remember, like, I got it. Like, I was like... irate, like yelling, like that's bullshit. They just don't like me, like this, that, and the other. And then I called back and apologized and said, you know, I'm sorry, I'm just really emotional about this. I don't think it's exactly fair, but I totally understand your position.
Yeah.
And I remember like losing sleep over it. It was probably the best thing that could have ever happened to me, because it probably wasn't going to be a lifetime career kind of, career kind of a job for a lot of these people. I think they realized it wasn't for me.
And that's why they wanted you out for that reason.
Quite possibly. I probably didn't have the best reputation at that time in my hometown anyway, so it wasn't.
But you mean judgment?
Yeah, but judgment? I've always worked with
when
kids.
When he was 12, he was a real dick.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't matter, he's 21 now.
Well, that's the thing about small towns. Everybody
I know. It's horrible.
But I'm glad that I had the exposure to all the different jobs that I've had, because being a comedian now, and whenever I do anything outside of comedy, I have a new respect for people that show up to do these jobs that they don't want to do.
Oh, heck yeah.
Every day.
And there's something to be said for it.
There's a certain level of something to be said for it, and a certain level of, like...
We do that, too, though. I mean, I was just telling you, like, I have a gig that I don't like to do, but I'm going to go do it. I mean, we all take jobs we don't want to.
Yeah. Yeah. But at the end of the
day. But at least it's just for us, it's like one weekend.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say.
For somebody else, it's 20 years at a job they can't stand.
With people that they can't stand.
Right.
And that's the one thing about us, is that like you can really minimize your exposure to the environment that you're not a fan of. Like,
yeah.
If there's a club you don't like, you can literally show up a half hour before the show and leave when you're done.
Right.
You know, that's a shitty thing to do to your fans.
The thing is, you're there for your fans.
Yeah.
That's not a shitty thing at all, because if you show up and do your job, I mean, because it's not about where you are, it's not about the club, it's not about what you've been through that day, it's about the moment of here we are right now.
Right.
Yeah.
But you,
so at least we get that release.
I noticed this in your show. You do a good job of, your show's inclusive in a way,
mm-hmm.
that kind of wraps the audience up and you kind of pull them to you. And then at the end of the show, they all want hugs and they want to take pictures. And
that's the best part for me.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I'm one of those weirdos who actually loves people.
The after show.
Yeah. I'm a freak. Yeah. I know that.
I am too. It's my favorite thing.
I love people.
Is
to, that's why I live in the desert, because I can get far away from them, so I can keep that love.
Yeah. That's a good explanation.
I live way out, you know. I go wilderness hiking at least 4 or 5 times a week. Just go get lost out there in the desert.
And that helps you.
That helps me love people.
Keep the battery full.
Because then I'm like, hey, people.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
That totally makes sense. And I see some people that I think have
I'm sure people who know me might feel that's a mutually beneficial thing for me to stay away from people, too.
Yeah.
I'm good in small doses.
Me too. I definitely have my times when I need to be alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the best part of being a comic and married. Because we both travel, so there's no, if one of us was stuck at home all the time, there would be some level
resentment.
Of resentment. And I think that over the summer months, there's definitely some resentment from my wife because I'm not working as much.
Mm-hmm.
And but I'm a great house husband. You know, I do all the cleaning. You know, I'm not the best with her laundry. Women's laundry is weird.
You just don't dry it. That's the trick. You just wash it in cold and put it on a rack.
It gets wrinkly and
no,
stuff.
No, you take it like this and you lay it flat on a drying rack.
For some reason, that's more... I use a drying rack for some of my things, too. But that level, like the wardrobe level of laundry, is very new to me.
Okay.
Like just in the last 2 years, I started wearing dress shirts and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Like trying to...
Grown-up clothes?
Yeah.
I'm weird about grown-up clothes. I put them on and I feel fake in them. I feel like this doesn't feel right on me.
Right.
But then as I look in the mirror, I'm like, no, bitch, you better get used
to it. Yeah,
yeah,
it looks good on you, though. It doesn't feel, but it looks good.
It's like,
good.
No, see, this is where you should be.
Yeah.
You know?
I think that's where I was at with it, too, because I think my articulation, especially on stage, matches more professional attire. You mm-hmm. know, if I go up in a hoodie and sneakers and start speaking.
See, I'm still dressing like a 12-year-old. I just wear glasses now. So,
smartened you up a little
you
bit.
You know, like, hey, I might be dressed like a 12-year-old, but...
It's funny that you do have kind of like that, I don't know, it's almost like a cowgirl.
You know, it's the boots. Because I wear boots. Because they sponsor me. Yeah. Macy Bean sends me these beautiful boots. And I feel great on stage in them. I don't like country music, but I'm a fan of the footwear.
But you have kind of a, you're Southern.
I'm Southern. But I'm more Southern. Stage, I'm though. Much more Southern on stage.
Okay.
And you know where that started? I went to theater school where they taught me how to speak like this if I choose to do so. And I can do the American diction.
Yeah.
What is it? Standard American diction. I went to therapy, like vocal therapy. And I went to voiceover training because I used to do a huge glottal stop, which I'm still aware of, but it's not as pronounced. So I did a lot of voice work to lose my accent, because when I first got to New York, my voice teacher in theater school was like, you sound like a black woman who spent time in Canada. And I was like, yeah, I'm from New Orleans. That's where I'm from. Most of my friends are black. It's a black city.
That is the funniest
My last ever. Roommate before I left New Orleans was a black woman who was engaged to a Canadian. So,
that makes you know, perfect sense.
So I lost the way I spoke because it was considered improper and incorrect. And I would get up on stage and I'd be like, am I saying this word correctly? And I would get in my head. And then Katrina happened and I thought, why am I avoiding where I came from when that culture could be gone in 10 years? Mm-hmm. And so, and also, I guess it's a self-esteem thing. I feel like when I speak like this, I'm just another boring white girl. And this is going to sound like a self-hate statement, but... I don't know. There are a lot of white women I feel very comfortable with, but for the most part, I don't feel very comfortable with the stereotypical Connecticut white woman. If we're sitting around, we don't have that much in common, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like if I go on stage and I'm talking like this, I'm just another person that I don't identify with. I didn't grow up like that.
Yeah.
I don't share... This is going to sound judgmental because I don't know every woman in Connecticut. But when you think about the stereotypical tri-state Republican mom, I just...
That's far from...
disconnect.
I totally see what you're saying. And I think...
And that's not even... But that doesn't even make sense. You know what I'm saying? It's a fear, I guess, of being perceived as something that I don't feel a connection to. So I guess I'm scared of other people's judgments. So I'm judging...
Yeah,
you know,
it's like a whole ball of fucked up psych.
Psychological goo up in my brain.
Yeah. Well, the first time I met you, I think it was about 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago. You were at the Dayton Funny Bone, and I was just hanging out, and I remember thinking that you were very different from what I remembered of your Comedy Central specials in person. You were much smaller.
I was pregnant when I taped that special. That's why.
When I was doing my research, I was like, oh, well, that
I was almost 7 months pregnant.
How was that as far as being like I've performed with a back pain or poison ivy on my face. What's it like having a person inside you and trying to be funny?
You know, it was actually really weird. Okay. It was the whole special, I wish I'd been able to enjoy it more. Because the whole time I was thinking, like, God, I hope I don't look preggers.
Yeah.
You know, because the material that I wanted to have be out there perpetually was not about being knocked up. And I was scared, too, because I didn't have an agent or a manager. And I was scared, like, oh, a booker's going to see this and think 3 years from now, she's pregnant. She doesn't want the gig.
Yeah.
So it's like, that again, fear. So, and I was just really, I just remember feeling like, okay, don't move, because I like to move on stage.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I can't pace the stage. I'm going to have to just stand there. And
so that wasn't part of the act. It wasn't a reveal. You didn't talk about being...
No, not at all. I did fat jokes. I did jokes. I did jokes about my muffin top. I did jokes about being chubby.
Didn't you coin the phrase muffin top?
It's not mine. Yeah. Oprah said it. Somebody on Oprah said it. And then I was doing a phone interview with a radio station and they kept talking about muffin top. And they were like, you should use that. That's what you got. Blah, 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 blah. I'm like, what the heck is this? So, but yeah, no, that's not mine.
Okay.
But, it's just one of those words that was in the lexicon that was about to hit, and I was lucky enough to hear it.
Right. That's definitely what I've been trying to lose.
Yeah, the muffin top. Now you have your app, your fancy app.
It's my fancy app on my phone.
yeah, but you know, it was weird. Right when, you know, when they bring you on TV, it's very different because you have a whole crew right there to help you, to like get you to your
mark. So let me ask you this. You're no manager, no agent.
Yeah.
And you're doing the spec. Who's with you?
My then husband came with me to the tape, and he was there with me, and my brother was in the audience, my best friend was in the audience.
But there's nobody there rubbing your shoulders telling you what's coming next.
Well, that's what the crew was for. There was a gentleman, I'll never forget, it was so funny, he walked over to me and he was like, you know, they touched you like 5 seconds, Miss Landry, and I said thank you. And when he did that, my son Ari, he was about 7 months, not here yet, but he did an entire flip. Like a somersault, uh-huh. And it hurt like a motherfucker, but it made me laugh because all I could think is, oh my God, the baby's waking up right now, and I'm just going to go out there and do fat girl jokes. And I was thinking like, don't fuck with me, kid. And I started giggling and like just overjoyed with this love for my kid. Like, yeah. Oh, we're a comedy team. Let's go do this. It's time to work. And
Willie, Lester, and Tyler.
When I walked onto the stage, I was giggling like a lunatic. And nobody knows why. And then I'll never forget, because it's a hyper awareness moment. Because, you know, you build up to this. Mm-hmm. You take your shit gigs. You take your lumps. You bomb your sets.
Yeah, yeah.
You go back to the drawing board. You cry your eyes out. You know, you get a strong run. You feel great about what you're accomplishing. And then finally, here's this moment. 10 years that you've been working towards this one goal. And I'm thinking, like, don't fucking notice this baby.
Yeah.
And
the most single most important thing in a person's life.
It's always been this weird disconnect, you know.
What
was a fun moment.
Let me ask you this. What's bigger? Like, what's more mentally part of your physical DNA, being a comic or being a parent?
Ooh, that's hard. My parenting situation, my own individual, I'm not working with somebody who recognizes that I am a comedian, is a value to my child.
Uh-huh.
At one time, it was a very different situation.
Yeah, yeah.
But now that it's something that can be like, mama said the shit word.
Yeah.
You know, mama started to say something, but then stopped. You know, it's hard because you can't turn that off.
Right.
It's like if you're a doctor and a dad, you're a doctor and a dad.
Yeah, yeah.
And nobody even challenges that shit or asks you,
right,
what's more important to you?
Right.
Because it's obvious as a man, you can have both and nobody gives a motherfuck.
Right.
And oh my gosh, you're a dad too?
Yeah.
And you help around the house?
Yeah.
And you're a doctor?
Right.
Give me a fucking break.
There's no wrong answer for me.
No.
Because I feel like...
But you won't be judged for it.
No, not nearly as much.
You know what's really sick?
But I was raised by women, you know.
Yeah, but there's a lot of women out there as a working mom.
Oh, yeah, women are the...
You know, I got the Aspen New Faces in... Yeah. It was 2006, and I've never told this story, but in 2006, I got a call from the women who were booking the New Faces on Aspen, and I didn't have a manager or an agent back then, and they were like, we saw you, we love you, there's nobody like you right now out there, you're going to be our female push this year, you're going to be our person, because you know, back then, there might be 12 spots, 15 spots,
right,
on the New Faces, and the what do you call, festival promoters or bookers get to pick a male and a female.
Uh-huh.
Without representation to come be part. So they're like, you're going to be our push. You're our girl this year. And then they found out I was pregnant. I went into a club one night, and I knew that they were there, and I almost walked out. I was like, shit. Because I just had this instinctual awareness of don't let them see this.
Right.
And I went up, and I was about 8 months pregnant at the time, and they saw me, and they didn't stay to talk to me. And I'm thinking, like, oh, I hope they left before I went
right
up. Because I closed the show. I'm thinking, like, well, they probably left. They probably saw all the talent that they were scoping, and they took off. And, about 3 months later, my friends start getting phone calls. They're doing this show in Aspen. They're going to go here in Aspen. And they're all getting phone calls. And I don't have a manager or an agent, so I have to call these girls myself. And I'm like, hey, you know, I'm just checking in. I haven't heard from you. And they're like, oh, yeah, you know, we're going to pass. And I'm like, what? Well, you know, you're having a baby. And I said, yeah, but my son's going to be born this date. And the festival's 3 months out from that date. And they're like, but don't you know how much a baby needs its mother? These are two women who don't have children.
Yeah.
Don't you know how much a baby needs its mother? And I said, well, I'm very aware of that, but, you know, my husband is actually the instigating factor for this child. Like, he's been talking me into, we should have a baby, and he is going to stay home with his child. I'm going to be gone for 3-4 days. You can't bring your baby to the festival. Oh, I'm not going to bring my baby to the festival. He's going to stay here with his daddy. Don't you going to want to breastfeed?
Oh, gosh.
And I said, and you know, in the back of your mind, you're thinking, am I really having this fucking conversation?
Right.
Like, I already accepted comedy does not have a human resources department. We deal with a lot of stuff in different ways, okay? But to be told by another woman who doesn't have a child that I'm a shitty mom because I'm not breastfeeding before I've even given birth, and this is 2006, and I'm just on the phone, and I'm thinking, like, I don't have to tell her this, but I said, I am going to breastfeed, actually. And I've learned how to, you know, I've been Googling how to do it. You just freeze it.
Yeah.
You can pump it out and freeze it, and it'll be viable while I'm away at the festival.
Let me in the fucking festival,
and they're like, well, you know, last year there was a couple that brought their baby, and the woman had the baby, and she, you know, she was in the festival, and her husband got really jealous. Because he's a comedian too, and he kept bringing the baby to all of our events. And I said, well, you know, another person's career is their choices. But I'm not bringing my child, and I'm not married to a comedian. That's not the same scenario in the very least of what I want. You know what? There's always next year. This is our last year doing it. HBO won't be involved next year, but you can, you know, you can do it next year. So there is still a huge problem in this country. And I don't think we talk about it, the sexism against working moms, or the, you know.
I think it's one of those things that, it's one of those conversations that's not.
Because, you know why? Because we're not supposed to be that ignorant anymore.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, it's almost like if we talk about
it. We did that.
It,
we talked.
Yeah.
We did that. No, we already worked all that out.
It's the same thing.
What
as
are you
racism.
Complaining about?
Things are better.
Right.
Now.
No, things. We worked that out
it's
in the
better.
70s.
Why are
it's
you
done.
About it today?
All like, these blacks. It's always got to be about race. Why can't we stop talking about race?
I never
Maybe because
owned
it's
any
still
slaves.
Fucked up. I know, right?
I don't slave anybody. Why are you mad at me?
I have nothing to do with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm totally removed from it, and I'm not a citizen in this country, and we should just get over it.
It's that's the sad
it's a lot
disconnect.
Easier to get over it's, something that you're not involved in.
Right? Because you don't want to see how you're benefiting from it.
Exactly.
Still. And there are a lot of poor white people, and I'm not saying there aren't. And there's more poor white people struggling, obviously, because there's more white
more
people.
More of them, yes.
But I guess it's easier, too, when you see yourself as the victim of your own struggle. It's easier to say, like, why can't they shut up?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're all... But what you don't understand is you're still white at the end of the day. You have a very different reality.
It is. It's,
you know?
For me, it's one of those situations where, being biracial, I don't want to say that I see both sides equally, because clearly I can't. I can only see them from the angle, from the cards that I was dealt. So, but I do have this aha moment that happens to me a lot of times when I'm talking to people that has them feel disarmed with the way that I'm speaking to them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, because you're very gentle. Oh, excuse me. You're very gentle as she hits the microphone.
gentle he is. Yeah, and I think that comes from being big, from being tall, and also from growing fast as a child. And I remember one time I was playing in this church, at my cousin's church, and I was like kind of swinging on the pews, you know, kind of like, and these two ladies looked at me, and they were like in their... These two older black ladies, and they're in their, like, fancy church wear or whatever. And they look at each other, and they're like, kind of give this like nod, like he's special kind of a nod. Like that, like he must be. And I remember thinking, like, oh, I'm going to have to behave the age that I look, not the age that I am, if I don't want people to think I'm retarded. And I don't mean retarded in a derogatory term.
Just stunted.
Well, yeah, well, because I knew at that point that I had dyslexia. I was already in learning disabled classes, so it wasn't like I had a stigma. You know
Got
what
it.
I mean? I thought I was just a few ticks of special needs, you know? And I saw those special needs kids in my classes from time to time. Like, for the most part, the kids that I was in class with were in regular classes, too, for some classes. I wasn't in special ed for every single class my whole life, but... there were some kids that were in there that it was like, I remember one time we were looking at the chalkboard and the teacher drew shapes and it was like a circle, square, rectangle or whatever. Mm-hmm. And some of the kids were like, she'd point at one and the kids would be like,
wow,
purple. And I'll be like, ah, it's not even.
That's horrifying. So sad.
And then I remember not really feeling like they were dumb, but that I was dumb.
Because you were there.
Because I was there. And then she put up the alphabet and starts pointing out letters. And I'm like, P. And she's like, no, that's a Q.
Oh, no. Yeah, oh, hon, I'm right? sorry.
So it was like an instant connection.
What a really horrible teacher. Let's be sensitive about that.
I think that, you know, I never considered that until you said, until you said that.
Seriously.
But it was literally like a kind of like in your face. But see, here's the flip side of that. I don't know how I had been behaving before that. I may have been behaving in a manner that I was too good to be in that class. You know what I mean? Or like yeah. I was better than these other kids.
Because you knew what...
Because like, that or because of something that happened at in a completely different lesson. Like yeah. I might have said somebody was stupid or like, come on. You know, like I'm not patient or anything like that. So I don't know if that was the... But the message was received. I deserve to be in this class. You know okay. what I mean? I don't deserve to be in those other classes. But it was like kind of like the whole time I was in special ed, I felt like a prisoner who was appealing to get out. You know what I mean? I keep writing the governor.
I was married. I understand.
Yeah. And I remember I was always like taking different tests to see if I could get out. And they'd let me out of the class. And I'd do horrible in regular classes because there was no personal attention. You know, you have to kind of follow along at the pace of 30 other kids. And I wasn't equipped for that. But I was always thought to be intelligent, just not capable, I think, was the... what they would say.
That's a good way to describe me.
That's a good way to describe a lot of comedians.
That's a lot of us. Yeah, people in general.
In general, yeah. And I don't know how much of that I carry with me to this day, but I think it's definitely part of my gentle nature and not trying to scare anybody.
Well, also, you know what I've come to realize, especially over the past few years, the slower and softer you speak, the more pleasant you are perceived to be. Not on stage. On stage, I like to get loud. But off stage, the more peaceful you can peaceably you can communicate your thoughts to somebody, it's easier for them to receive them.
I definitely agree.
Because so many of us yell at each other at this point that you're like, why is somebody quiet?
I always try to default to apology as opposed to, what the fuck? You know what I mean? Because like, think about like if you're driving and somebody, you do something, you don't see somebody trying to pull in and you kind of block their way and they like, oh, and I'm like, I was just, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. But then they're like, and they keep that.
They keep it going.
Yeah, and it's kind of one of those things where it's like, they're like already waiting to be pissed off about
something.
But that's
how so many people live.
Yeah.
So many people.
On the verge of
snapping. I used to live in New York City, I was the biggest fucking bitch because I'm hypersensitive to people's vibrations.
Energy,
I know that about myself now.
Yeah.
Now that I live in the desert. But I was always on top of other millions of people. Millions of people. Millions of people. And every time I stepped out the door, it was going to be me against them because I wanted a seat on the subway. I'm going to get out the station first. I'm going to go get that spot. I'm going to park my car here. You're always in this constant battle. You anticipate it, so you never have the possibility of letting your guard down completely.
Yeah, and I think that you definitely keyed into something because when you're in an environment of kill or be killed, you default to the killer.
Yeah. And how many people actually live under the perception right now that we are being attacked?
Right.
Christians are under attack.
Right.
White men are under attack.
Right.
Black men are being attacked. We all feel like we have to defend right now. So we're anticipating bullshit every time we leave our home. But how many people have bullshit constantly in their home too?
Yeah. It's what, you know, I guess it's like what you choose to pay attention to. Because if you're, you know, there's like the Black Lives Matter, All Lives Matter, Police Lives Matter. It's like, let's just stop killing each other.
We've been doing that since we got here.
I mean, I'm shocked at the level of violence. And it's not so much that I'm like, I'm not like, can't we all just get along?
But we could.
But the sensationalism of the violence, I think, has a direct impact on how much violence we're actually encountering every day.
Yeah.
You know, it's the police commissioner saying that the mayor has blood on his hands for saying something bad about the police. He's got blood on his... It's like these inflammatory...
Dial it down.
Yeah.
It's very dramatic.
If he drove the killer there, then you could say he's got blood on his hands. But let's dial down the rhetoric.
Right.
Because that's not serving anybody.
Not at all. And the whole defensiveness of certain segments of this population right now just points out we have a problem.
Yeah.
Because if millions of people are voicing their concerns about one issue, that's millions of people.
Yeah.
That's not two people down the street from your precinct who are pissed off because maybe there was a chokehold that lasted a little too long one day.
Right.
You know, if millions of people are coming out now and saying like, hey, can we work together to make this better? And your first reaction is, fuck you.
Yeah.
Maybe the problem lies with you.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to cooperate.
There's that. And I think there's also like this idea that we're not the problem. We're not the problem. I mean, I collectively, everyone's the problem. But we're also all the solution. You know what I mean?
Kumbaya.
Yeah. I'm saying, if they would just listen to me, I'd be calling the police station every day to give them the scoop, but they don't want to listen. They'd be like, we got crimes and shit. And I'm like, yo, listen.
Yeah, but how many, whatever. I don't want to go there. You know? Mm-hmm. I'm just saying how many crimes actually get solved.
Right.
You know? We were talking about this last night. I don't know how much time we have left, all these school shootings, I'm very pro-gun. I think everybody should be armed.
Mm-hmm.
I think you should know how to use your weapon. I think you should be trained. I think if that's your weapon, you're responsible for it. If something bad happens, that's on you.
Mm-hmm.
Just like a car. But obviously can be just even as deadly, if not more so.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. My problem with all these school shootings is everybody's like, when are they going to stop? When are they going to stop? I'm just a comedian. Okay. But I would reckon most of these people who are men, they're all men, go into these schools. It ain't their first rodeo with doing some crazy shit, okay? It's just now it's escalated. But I would bet a huge percentage of all these campus shooters are people whose neighbors have tried to call CPS, whose teachers probably should have stepped up and reported because they were mandatory and they noticed bullshit. They noticed signs of abuse, neglect. They noticed that the kid was coming in doing weird stuff, but they chose not to pursue it for whatever reason. And I think once we have more respect for civilians who are insightful, objective, calling in to report things and that being taken seriously, I think, you know, now there's this push to get people trained so we all recognize the signs.
Mm-hmm.
That's only as effective as the people you call to report to and what they do with that information.
Sure.
I think a lot of things get diluted and not investigated properly.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't think it's about the guns. I think it's about our mental health care system.
Yeah.
And it's about police bias.
Yeah.
And it's about corrupt organizations that we call for help that don't give that help.
Those are like definitely in the top 10, and then it's like 10,000 other things that are so micro that managing them would be a waste of energy and money. You know what I mean? I think that's really what we face with the gun problem. We're not going backwards.
No, but we need background checks.
But we do need, like, some enforceable laws. And I think this whole, our whole tax system is built on loopholes. Our whole gun legislation is built on loopholes. And I think,
well, we need to step up and fix that, though.
Yeah,
that's
I
up
do.
To us as people. But we don't have any leaders right now.
We don't have any. Well,
I mean, we have a few.
Here's the thing: we keep reelecting the Congress people that we have. We keep reelecting the senators. None of Congress or the Senate have a high approval rating, but we still send the same people back, and that shows a lack of intellectual curiosity about the process.
I agree with you very much, though, but again, it comes back to money. If you want to go up against somebody who has spent 30 years in this market, they kind of have that corner. Where do you come? Where do you come from? Where do you get your donors who may already like this person because they get everything done through this person? So it's really hard to crack in.
Yeah, it's a good old boy system.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also like not even cracking, who's going to let you in, you know, because you can't be rich in this country without somebody letting it happen for you.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? There's always going to be someone who's like, no, we can allow this or we can't allow this at some degree, either a bank, a producer.
Looking for the green light.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Everybody's waiting for that Project Greenlight situation. And my feeling with guns is that a choice to carry, like, they're like, we need to arm teachers. And I'm like, a lot of people become teachers because they don't want anything to do with a gun. You know what I mean? It's like, that's not...
Well, think about the majority of our teachers. These are people that graduated from an institution most of us can't wait to get the fuck out of.
Exactly.
And what do? They turn around and say, I want that desk.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of great teachers. There's a lot of great teachers, and I'm not saying that there aren't. And I've gone to public school and private school, and I was blessed to find great educators and instructors. That being said, there's a lot of dead weight.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of just gossipy hands.
It's really hard to get rid of a teacher just like a cop.
It's the same shit. And that's our problem as I see it. Just a comedian, what the fuck do I know? You have these two organizations that are supposed to take care of our weakest and most vulnerable. And a lot of them, why are they there?
Mm-hmm.
What made you think this is all I want? Seventh grade was good enough for me. Let me go back.
Right.
That was your emotional happiness level? And some of them are just like, wow, I had this great teacher who blew my mind.
Right.
I want to go back and do what she did or he did.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. That's
and
a calling.
Other people just want their summers off.
Exactly.
It's just a job that they could do.
And the same thing with cops. Are you there to protect and serve? Because I have a lot of respect and love for you. Thank you. Because that's a calling.
Or are you there
because your uncle was on the force and you knew that you got those bennies and you knew that you're going to get free gas if you just turn in this receipt and you might get a little extra pussy because of the uniform and you'll pick up some bouncer shifts too?
Yeah.
Is that why you're there? Because maybe you should, you know, just work security detail.
Well, I think that there's definitely like I don't know why they call it this, aces in their places. You know, like people that are so good at certain tasks, doing the task.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, we're obsessed with statistics in this country, which I think is it makes it hard to be a cop, makes it hard to be a teacher.
Yeah.
Because you're looking at, like, we got to get these numbers up. Some kids don't learn good. You know what I mean? In the system that we have of everybody learns
cookie cutter,
the same way.
Yeah.
That's
which is
just
silly.
Not, you know, I think I could have been served. Let's put it this way. I could have been, I think, in a gifted class just as easy as I was in a special ed class. It was the individual attention that I needed. It wasn't. I couldn't. There was no incentive to focus if I was sitting in the back of the room.
Mm-hmm.
I would draw. I would do whatever I wanted to do. Had a wild imagination. But I think that that's a lot of kids, and there's no real prize. Well, I mean, what if you can sit down, shut up, and keep your head down, and that makes you a successful student? That doesn't make you a really successful human being.
No.
Right?
It makes you a robot.
It makes you easy to control.
Yeah.
So, and I think I was never easy to control. I think I only got out of high school because they were like, we can't have him come back. Because you know,
that's good enough.
Yeah. Like
we've reached what we can do with this one.
He can
kick him out.
I was so done with school that I had a full ride scholarship and I didn't take it.
Wow.
I mean, like I signed, I did all the paperwork and everything and I just didn't show up.
You're a self-sabotager like me.
Mm.
I had a scholarship to University of New Mexico and I went out there and I checked it out and I was like, I can't. Like everything's brown. This lawn is brown. These buildings are brown. The food is brown. The people are brown. They smoke pot that's brown because it's all dried out. It's too much brown for me. I want to go back to New Orleans.
Yeah.
I want to go back to what I know. And the drinking age is 18, and I'm about to be 18.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to go back home with my people.
Yeah.
Not a big mistake.
A big divergence from what a path could have been.
I am so much happier in the desert with the West Coast feeling. If I had had that younger in my life, maybe I would have had a much healthier past 20 years.
I wonder myself what if I had taken the scholarship, because I would have been one of the first classes to come out. I had a soccer scholarship, and I would have been one of the first kids to come out into the MLS draft.
Oh, wow.
I've been eligible for pro soccer in the United States, which
wow.
is like at that point
Huge.
All I really wanted to do. But I think I was burnt out on soccer. It wasn't really it was a great soccer school, but it wasn't Division I, and so I knew that would limit my chances. And it was also one of those things where it was like I kind of wanted to just hang out and be done with school for a while.
Yeah.
And when I ended up going back to school, I wasn't playing soccer at all. I basically gave up on soccer, and I just decided to go to like community college and take some classes. None of it ever stuck. I went to like a 4-year, took some classes. I went to a couple different community colleges, took classes, and went to Hawaii and took some classes, but I never did anything. I just couldn't get the
Momentum.
Yeah, could never get close enough to the tip of the spear to be like, let's push for the graduation date. And also, I had no idea what I wanted to do. I think I always knew I wanted to be a comedian, but had no idea how you would get started, mm-hmm. and also had no self-confidence in that kind of...
So you're good for this.
Perfect. Perfect. It wasn't until...
Tribe.
It was, yeah. It took a lot of awakenings before I got to this. But I had a question for you that I wanted to ask you. You said earlier you were having all these opportunities while being pregnant. What stage of your career were you when you were pregnant?
Okay.
Like,
you know,
were you headlining, featuring?
The crazy part is, this is going to sound bad. Probably a lot of shit I've said sounds bad, but we'll go with this one. It's weird because I was still featuring. I would headline like real crap gigs because I was a woman. And it's so different now. Our industry is so much better off than it was just 10 years ago as far as women are concerned. And I ain't saying it's easier or harder to be a female comic or not, because that's all I know.
Right, that's my struggle.
Is what I know. Like, right. I hate when people are like, is it harder to be a female comic? Like, ask me next life if I come back as a dude and do
it's
this.
It's actually hardest to be a Persian cat.
Right. This is the only thing I know. But anyway, that being said, it was a time where even if you, and it's just a few years ago, okay?
Yeah.
Even if you had a bunch of TV credits, it was really rare on the East Coast. I started in New York City. It was super rare back then that you headlined as a woman. You were Judy Gold. You were Corey Kahaney.
Yeah.
Strong, extremely strong women. It was very rare that we had just a few. And there were other women as well. I'm not trying to leave anybody out, but those are the two that come to mind. So I was doing feature work, and what happened was I found out I was pregnant, you know, because I was kind of going along with it. My ex-husband was like, we should have a baby. And I was like, okay, whatever, we'll try. And I thought, oh, I have 6, 7, 8 months. Got pregnant the very first try. And I was like, fuck, I cried. I know that sounds really horrible. My son, you have no idea how much I love.
Every possibility was on the table when I found out I was going to be a father. Yeah. As far as what do we do now?
Right, the emotions.
But for the mother of my son, there was only one possibility. You know what I mean? So I was like, okay,
we were going to have, but it's still just like, what? Like, I thought I had more time to get used to this.
Yeah.
What the fuck? And so what happened in my career is I was just like, fuck. You know, here I am. I don't have an agent or a manager. I've been working with somebody, but it didn't work out. So at this time, I didn't have a manager. I don't have a booking agent. I've been doing this 9 years, running my ass off. Now I'm pregnant. Oh, man. And I had sent the tape into Comedy Central to do a half-hour special before I found out.
Did they ask you, or did you print?
None. Oh, no, they didn't ask for one, but I had done Premium Blend.
Okay. All
and right. It was like that 2-year mark. And back in the day, you know, there's no hard or fast in this business.
Right.
There's no rules. But back in the day, you did your Premium Blend and then you submitted your tape, and chances were you were going to do a half hour special. That was chronology. So I submitted my tape and I did it independently. And because I was kind of working with a manager at that time, but we weren't signed to one another, and he didn't see what I wanted to do.
Uh-huh.
You know, his own perception of my material was like, we should do it this way. And I'm just like, that's not what I want.
Yeah.
So anyway, that being said, I send in the tape, find out I'm knocked up, cry. There goes my career. I don't know what to do. No, baby. None of my friends had babies.
Yeah.
I'm a comedian.
Yeah.
Nobody I knew had a friggin', you know?
Yeah.
Anyway. I give up on my career. I'm just like, okay, well, I wish I had gotten to do my special, but I guess that ain't going to happen. I guess I better just get used to it. And the moment that I gave up, it all came. I got three TV spots that year. I had a baby. I had a manager in Los Angeles see my special and call me. I'll never forget. I was so tired. I hadn't slept right in days. I just felt fat. I was breastfeeding, sloppy, angry. You know,
you
on Oxy.
Me?
I was on Oxy. Yeah, because, you know, they give you all these meds.
Yeah.
Some stall fucking Courtney Love and shit at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And this guy calls me with this Australian accent, starts speaking to me about coming out to LA. And I was just like, okay.
Yeah.
You know? So, but my career's always been like that. I'm such a hippie, I always take the back door.
Hippie,
you know?
A hippie gun rights activist. I love it. Because I want to do a bit about... I had a bit where I was like, hey, bro, you want to smoke some weed and look at my guns? Like, you just don't hear that. It's like
you do out west.
Yeah, exactly.
You do, but it's not like a let's go kill each other kind of thing.
No,
it's more
like,
just, you know...
They say Billy the Kid held it.
Namaste, let's go shoot.
Yeah. You want to go shoot some squash?
We'll do some yoga first. Have some hummus.
Do some downward dog and then shoot. Yeah, that's probably dope.
Yeah, it's
that's
wild.
Interesting. So, do you have anything coming up that you want to plug? Do you have any?
Yeah, I have a new CD coming out. It's going to come in the next few weeks. We haven't really picked a target date yet, but it's going to be very, very soon.
You're going to do iTunes, or are you going to merch it first? Or
I think we're going to iTunes it and Amazon it and download it.
What's your preferred method of getting your material out? What's your favorite way of, because you sell CDs after shows and stuff like that.
Yeah. I don't know. However it gets out. I'm happy to be on Pandora. I'm thrilled for that. I'm very thankful.
Do you get the checks for that? Do you get the Pandora?
Yeah. Yeah. It ain't buy a house kind of shit. You know what I mean? But it still feels good. It just, you know what it feels? My happiness, I would like to have more money.
Yeah.
Obviously. All of us would.
Yeah.
My happiness, though, comes in the form, you know, I get paid, and that's beautiful, and I'm blessed, but I also get these wonderful, like, I love you on Pandora, I listen to you all the time at work, and I'm laughing, and nobody knows why, and I'm like, fuck yeah, that's what feels good, that's that connection, because I don't, you know, I'm not a comedian who's on TV,
yeah,
I'm not, they don't know what to do with me,
yeah,
you know, and I've had opportunities, and I fucked them up,
yeah,
at the same time, there's other things that came into my life that I just wasn't ready for them, so I blew them off, and I was ego-driven and stupid, I can see that now. But a lot of times, too, it's like, where do you put this girl who talks funny? She's a liberal, but she's from the South, and she converted to be a Jew, and she got a baby, but she doesn't live with the baby. I get calls from mom shows, and they're like, what do you mean you don't live with your kid? And, well, because I'm like the dad. I'm the dad. Like, we're going to talk about slumber parties. And I'm like, yeah, okay. I dropped him off once.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? So
weird.
It's weird. It's like, where the fuck do you put me? And so that's why I'm on the road telling my dick jokes. Because my place right now in this industry for this moment is on the stage. Yeah. And that's where I feel the best. Like, I feel most comfortable in my nightclub with grown people sitting around getting a little raunchy, talking about shit we ain't supposed to. When I'm with the bright lights in the past, I think I'd be in a different space now where my head is, but back in the past, I'd be on that TV stage with all the bright lights and all these audiences who aren't really my audiences. They're just here and they're trying to be supportive, but they don't really understand what I want to do.
It's not.
And we're trying to have this intimate moment between us.
It's like it just going felt to so church superficial. In a shopping center.
Yeah, it always felt, yeah, like and, this isn't and, my
and
art.
And I'm not to discredit anybody that goes to church in a shopping center, but I do find this to be true. And I learned it when I used to manage and own a poker club.
Mm.
In that, if everything looks as it should,
it makes sense.
It's just easy.
Totally.
You know what I mean? And it's like we do these shows in a hotel banquet hall or a hotel like meeting room or something like where a seminar would happen.
Right.
And there's a podium and you're trying to do stand up behind a podium or whatever. And it's like, it's going okay, but it's like, if I had a stage and a mic
microphone
and a stool, this would go exponentially better. If the lighting was better, if they couldn't see each other.
I won't perform outside.
Right.
I won't. I just say no now. I've tried too many times. I have so much respect for comedians who can walk out and rock an amphitheater. That's really hard, especially daytime.
Yeah.
I don't do anything daytime outside ever because I've learned.
I did one show outside under the sun. It was the sun was setting, which was like our stage light. And it went really well.
Oh,
but
awesome.
I knew, like, we were all sitting there, and I was with Gabe Kia from Cincinnati, and he was like, you know, this is so far from ideal. And I was like, I'm just going to bank on the fact that we're in my hometown and that this many people showed up to hear what we have to say. And it was fucking awesome. But it was one of those things, like, there was like a thrash metal band playing a block away that was audible. You know,
crying
like everybody
babies,
could hear it. Yeah,
car horns, like, buses.
It became like a street
someone
festival.
Drops cotton candy. There's
cars
a meltdown.
Cars driving by. And it was just so many variables. But, you know, we held it for an hour and a half.
I'm a dancing monkey. Give me a guitar.
What's crazy to me is these, I've never seen it, but I know that it happens. Street performing comedy.
That used to be a thing in New York.
Right.
Before my time.
Right.
Yeah. We used to go out there.
I can't even believe
people
would do that.
NYU in Washington Square.
Yeah.
And they would tell their jokes and they would pass a hat.
Wow.
I okay, this, I might be completely off on this because sometimes things get twisted up in my head. What was his name? The one that did Bebe's Kids. The one that didn't
Ralph.
Get...
No, was it Robin?
Robin Harris. I heard, and I don't know if this is true, so I probably should Google it before I put this out there, but I heard he used to be one of those acts.
Really?
And that's how he honed his comedy, was because it is so intense, and it's now, and it's in your face, and you better be funny, and it better be quick, but you know, can't be annoying.
Yeah.
He would bring people into the park, and he would collect an audience. But I don't know. I might be mixing them up with
somebody else. There's a host of people that I've heard would do that have, you know, made it pretty big, and I can only imagine because performing for, just like if you were doing magic on the street, there's no room for error.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like everybody walks away. I saw this guy, I think it was in Amsterdam, it was a video, and he was juggling knives and caught the blade. And he's like, show's over. And people were laughing, and he's like, no, seriously, show's over.
That wasn't really
it wasn't really, that's a big faux pas. Aww. But it's the best thing about it is, about comedy, is that we're not juggling knives if we're doing it right. And
we are, you just don't see it. It's seamless if we're doing it right. There's a lot of smoke and mirrors to what we do.
Internal razor blades. You know what I mean? It's like, what when you catch the blade, it happens on the inside, but the damage is just as real. You're like, I'm bleeding on the inside. It's that warm rush of blood in your guts. And you're like, oh, God, this is going fantastic. But, okay, so you got a new CD coming out.
Yes.
What's your Twitter handle? Do you Twitter much?
You know, I go through spurts with Twitter. I'm very sensitive, and some days people are so vicious.
What's your connection? What's your connection point? Your website?
Facebook, but I'm trying to be more Twitter because I'm trying to be more Twitter.
What the frick does that mean?
It just I see the much more political value to Twitter, and that's kind of where my mind is right now. I see it as a much more immediate platform, which used to scare me. That's why I got scared of it, because it moves so quickly. Because I'm getting up there.
It's the new version of a party line.
Basically, and I remember talking to somebody who was a little younger than me, and they're like, okay, I realize I don't know what I'm doing. Like, when Twitter came out, I was just like, fuck it, I am my age, you know? And that's how I felt about Twitter, and I'm actually starting to engage more on Twitter. And I am going to start an Instagram account.
Yes.
Every show, I get at least a few millennials like, why aren't you on Instagram already? What about us?
I could see, because of all the pictures you take after shows, that's going to be a huge platform
but
for you.
I've been lazy, and I've also been dealing with a lot of personal bullshit because I extricated some venom out of my life that just never quite goes away. And I've been dealing with that for the past few years.
Uh-huh. Can we do something special?
Yeah.
Can we sign you up for an Instagram account right now?
Okay, let's do it.
Get your phone.
I don't think we're going to be able to because...
Is your phone still dead?
Because I've been wanting to do that for like the past month.
Success. I'm totally unrelated.
That's been on my total to-do list.
It's on your bucket list. All right, well, we'll wrap this up right here. And thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
For being a part of this. I feel like we were... we did vaudeville in a past life or something. And that's been our connection. It could have been one of the Jew resorts that they do, you know, over the summer. People stay for a week.
It
was like Dirty
lot.
Dancing.
Yeah,
it would have been like Dirty Dancing.
A lot.
It would.
Uh huh.
Past lives. Thank you. You've been an awesome guest.
You've been an awesome host. Oh.